just wanna flat line.
I just wanna
flat line.
I feel like
maybe this is all my fault.
But I just wanna
flat line.
I just wanna
flat line.
I feel like
maybe we going too far.
Alright guys, welcome back to the fifth installment of the Flatline Fitness Podcast. This is your host, Joel Cummins.
And Garrett Augsburger back.
Today we have a pretty interesting topic of discussion. We're going to be talking about genetics today, and I think I'm pretty excited about this topic, but I just think that's something that's huge out there, and I think it's actually pretty big on excuses when it comes to fitness.
It's a really interesting topic. I'm excited to talk about it too. So fair amount to cover, but we're going to try to keep it fairly simple because it can get pretty complex at times.
No, absolutely. And you know, there's a lot of science to go with genetics, and to be honest, I don't think either of us are experts when it comes to understanding
genetics.
No,
that's definitely not my expertise. I just know enough to get by.
No, yeah, I don't think you need like a large amount of genetics background to understand just limitations on genetics when
it comes to training and nutrition, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you don't have to be a geneticist to understand that there are some limitations. You can just look at people and be able to understand, like, hey, there are some genetic variations at play here, and
right.
Just be like, okay, well, that just doesn't make sense. So I think to start off, you know, we could talk about our own genetics a little bit. For instance, if we were to look at you and me, you know, two totally different people, two totally different builds, I think we're built for different areas of performance when it comes to response to strength training, even just little bits like that. You know, there can be people in the gym that use genetics as an excuse, I think, a little bit too early. But when it comes down to things as a whole, we're able to see that, you know, you can do a lot with what you're given, and I think that some people draw that conclusion too early when it comes to, hey, I have bad genetics, therefore my work ethic is going to be poor.
Right, so they're basically limiting themselves from the start. We're not all as genetically gifted as some people are, but we've all been blessed in certain areas, and we need to take advantage of what we're good at.
No, yeah. So, like, if we were to look at family history has a huge impact on the way that we're built, you know, genetic variants and what genes that we have, what versions of genes do we have, what's our reciprocations of genes, you know, when we see, like what's your family history like? What's people like in your family history, like, for the most part?
Right, so if you want to just talk about
ours, not like talk about our history,
yes,
and like what changes ours.
So, like, it's a little weird in my family, because I feel like I got the short end of the stick, you know, genetic stick. But like I said, we all have our excuses. A lot of people in my family were fairly tall. Both grandfathers over 6'2". Had a grandfather's professional football player, played in the NFL, was close to 300 pounds, and then there's me, 5'6", 5'7", 170 something pounds.
You're not 5'7".
You know,
good try.
So, I argue I have I'm one of the better people out there when it comes to strength for my size.
Oh, yeah.
So we all, like we're talking about, we're all gifted in certain areas, and you kind of have to roll with your punches.
Yeah. I think a funny thing is with me, if we were to compare, like, we can't just compare immediate families. Like, if we were to look at your dad and my dad,
mm-hmm.
Your dad is way more fit than my dad, just as a basis. However, my dad was a great athlete in high school.
Mm-hmm.
He just never fell in love with weights like I do. You know, he was quarterback, starting point guard. He did high jumping. He could do a 360 dunk pretty easily or whatever, you know. And you look at him, and he was 135 pounds graduating high school, but he was an athlete. You know, I'd like to see what he could do just picking up a weight kind of thing. And then there's my mom's side of the family where, you know, there's some big corn-fed boys from Oklahoma. You know, I wish I could show you their hands, but one of their fingers is literally like two of my fingers. both, like, all three of them are just big, burly guys. And, you know, age 40, you could put two plates on a bench.
Big frames.
Yeah, they could bench that pretty easy or whatever. And I think that has a huge impact on how I'm able to perform in the gym and things like how I respond to training. I think I respond to training way differently than you do.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I think I might have a little bit, you know, not as good of genetics for building strength in the gym. I think that's, you can look at my bench press, and it's literally so depressing comparing your bench press to my bench press. Well, Garrett can bench like another 150 pounds on bench compared to me.
If we want to break this down from a genetic standpoint, though, like this... what you're missing in bench press, and what I'm gaining in bench press, it is a genetic thing. Because we train very similar, you know, and we eat very similarly.
Yep.
So, if we're conditioned by the same, we've been training the same for the same amount of time, same nutrition plans, let's break down the reasons why I would still have a significantly higher bench press than you.
Yeah.
So, I have shorter levers. My arms are shorter, my base of power is shorter.
Oh my goodness, he's going to the long arms excuse thing.
No, I'm serious. There is something to that.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I've got a much broader chest, so my range of motion is cut down. I'm not having to move the weight as far. And I even think there's we can even break it down farther into motor unit recruitment in the muscle fibers. Some people do have a better genetic propensity for recruiting more muscle fibers. And then there's muscle type or fiber distribution, too.
Yeah.
I might have more type 2 muscle fibers than you. You might have more type 1. Yeah. You might be better in the endurance area. Obviously, we have to get a muscle biopsy to get this.
I think we can do it literally just from, like, it's so funny. We can touch your muscle and then touch my muscle.
Yeah, so.
And mine is just looser. Yours is so tight.
It's called, that's called the muscle tone, is the tightness of the muscle. So yeah, it's like touching my arm or my chest compared to Joel is like his bicep might be larger than mine, but mine naturally is just sitting in a much harder state. It's just a genetic thing. It's the weirdest thing. But yeah, so
it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. So even just like that one lift bench press, there's a lot of different factors that play in when it comes to genetics.
Yeah, and then if you look at my muscles, I feel like I definitely have an advantage when it comes to like aesthetics. I feel like my muscle bellies are a little bit rounder.
Yeah, when it comes to hypertrophy and actual look, Joel brings a better physique when it comes to like
I look nice, but you lift nice.
Yeah, so I like to think I'm better in the powerlifting area, and Joel's much better, brings a better shape on stage.
No, I agree. And it's like, sometimes I argue that lack of thicker hips makes it harder for me to, you know, come out of the chute of a squat or be strong out of a deadlift, but I try to not use that as an excuse and just man up and be like, hey, you need to get stronger kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, learning to
get your form down,
improve weaknesses. All right, and now I think we can translate this kind of into the actual science of genetics. And what's really funny is the generic number for, you know, what is, you know, if we look at your genes and my genes, the typical number is 99.9% of our genes
are the same.
It's going to be the exact same.
So, like, where does that 0.01 difference come in?
It's huge.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you can... I think I saw a picture of Manute Bol, who was a 7'8 basketball player, and then Muggsy Bogues, who is 5'2".
Yeah.
And you can see, like, if their genes are 99.9% the same, you can tell that that's huge. And it doesn't always come down to just that 0.01%. You can just literally look at someone and be like, hey, that 0.01% doesn't really make sense. It's kind of more a relative change. Like, if you look at our genes and, you know, comparison to apes, you know, some people say that chimpanzees have 99%.
We still share, like, 99% of our genetic material with the other great apes.
It's ridiculous. There's obviously more than a 1% difference if you look, especially from the outside. You can see, you know, obviously we don't have hair all over us.
There's more than the 1% difference. We're looking at the actual genetic build, the DNA structure. Like, it is 99% like the same.
Yep.
But it just shows that how that much that 1%, when it's transcribed to different proteins, it can go a long way.
Oh yeah. So, you know, that 0.01%, you know, it's a number out there, but there are same genes, but have different versions of that gene. For instance, there's the ACTN3 gene. You know, Greg Knuckles actually alludes to this gene quite a bit, mm-hmm. because it's actually the gene that is, highly relative to type 2 muscle fiber recruitment and explosiveness and power. And, you know, there are two different transcriptions of that gene. And, you know, technically they're the same gene. It's just a different version of that gene. Mm-hmm. So some people have an advantage of having the good version of that gene, and some people have the poor version of that gene. And you can see, you know, if you see like a skinny guy that is really strong, how often do you see a skinny guy that's like awkwardly strong? You can see that every once in a while. Yeah. I remember that there was this guy at the A&M Rec Center, like sophomore year of college, and, you know, I was over there dumbbell pressing 80s or whatever, and this dude was definitely like 40 pounds lighter than me, and he was pressing hundreds, and I was like pretty depressed at the fact that he was able to be so strong for being so skinny. And there's kind of a, I think a lot has to do with neurotransmission right there, like when you're looking at how he's able to activate that, and I think that's heavily involved with that ACTN3 gene. There's another gene that is plays a role in how we digest carbohydrates, salivary amylase. You know, there's actually data to support that how someone expresses that gene or how many copies they have of that gene. For instance, Greg Knuckles talks about how people that have fewer than 4 copies of that gene, they're able to not properly digest carbohydrates like some people. This kind of relates a little bit to insulin sensitivity and how people, and this literally just has to do with spit, pretty much, salivary amylase, the first enzyme in our mouth that helps to digest food.
It's the beginning process of digestion of carbohydrates in your mouth.
So, and then there are some people that have 9 copies or more, and they stay quite a bit leaner than the general population, and they're able to lose fat a little bit easier. And it's funny how just something like a change in someone's spit can help someone with satiety and how they digest carbohydrates. I think that's crazy, to be honest. To be honest, before this, I hadn't even thought of it that deep. When it comes to carbohydrate metabolism, I thought that was pretty crazy, to be honest. Anything that you want to touch on as far as gene variants in that aspect?
No, if you want to move on to like muscular potential, talk about that a little bit. People listening to this might want to just move with my genetics, how much size can I put on?
Are we talking steroids or non-steroids?
We'll start with just your everyday, genetics.
God-given genetics, yeah. not that douche in the gym who has horrible form but takes a lot of testosterone and looks great.
We'll get there.
Because that does get frustrating.
We'll start with what you're given.
So first, I think it'd be good to cover the fat-free mass index, mm-hmm. which stands for FFMI. If you've ever seen that, is kind of like a way to estimate genetic potential when it comes to muscle building. So FFMI, fat-free mass index. If we're able to look at fat-free mass index, you know, there are different scores that people have been able to look at. And when we look at the fat-free mass index, it takes into account body fat percentages, height, and weight. You know, if you're above 25, a lot of people say that you're that you're going to be on steroids.
Yeah, so the natural cutoff is usually around about 25. If you're over 25... people can claim, oh yeah, this person on steroids. If you're under 25, oh yeah, this person natural. I think there's definitely a little more leeway than that, but that's a fairly decent guideline.
It's a pretty good way to measure things, but I think there are some, You know, there it lacks a little bit of stability when you look at things like visceral fat and subcutaneous fat. Sometimes those numbers can throw off the FFMI in or fat-free mass index. For instance, there was a study that looked at, I think it was over 150 participants, and they were able to look at steroid users versus non-users. And it was just an observational study for the most part, and they were looking at FFMIs. And for the most part, I think 90% of the steroid users were above that 25 FFMI rating. And then about 90% of the naturals were below that 25 FFMI rating. So they kind of like picked that and were like, okay, well, 25 is kind of a sweet spot. If someone's approaching that 25, maybe we should start discussing whether or not this person's on steroids. So for instance, I think the last time I looked at FFMI, it was a while ago. I think it was about 2 years ago. I was looking at a video and we were looking at Steve Cook's FFMI. Pretty impressive FFMI.
How's he measured at?
I think it was 26.5.
Really?
If I remember. And Steve Cook, you know, he used to compete natural. Who's to say if he still is, but they actually took his body stats from when he competed in a natural organization. And he looked a little bit smaller at that point. But he was still at about, I think he was on stage at about 7.5. And his body weight was about 205. But give this, he is 6'3".
He's just, well, I mean, have you ever seen pictures of him in, like, in college, though?
Dude, the dude's a monster.
I will say he was probably more genetically gifted. He had big arms in, broad shoulders. So,
and he wasn't even doing bodybuilding style training.
No.
For the most part, he was just doing strength training.
He's a college football player.
Yeah. I mean,
just a big guy.
Yeah, developed really, really well. Do you have anything to touch on FFMI?
No, I think you hit all the points you need to talk about on as far as FFMI goes. I just want to talk a little bit about, like, muscle to bone ratio.
Okay.
I don't know if you looked into that at all. But a lot of studies are showing, like, the amount of muscle you can gain is limited to how much bone that you have. So basically saying the max you can put on, like, is, let's say 1 kilogram of bone supports a maximum amount of 5 kilograms of muscle. So that's the maximum amount that you can put on per kilogram of bone. It's 5. So the 5-to-1 ratio is where we see a lot of people top out at. And that is going to be a pretty good indicator of your ability to build muscle. I think from the studies that I saw, it seemed to be a pretty accurate measurement. And I think that was measured using...
I believe that they've used...
is that wrist circumference?
No. Wrist and ankle girth is a different measurement. So the bone density, they actually use DEXA and MRI for that. They use DEXA and MRI from studies that I've looked at, and they're able to actually pick up bone density and total weight from DEXA and MRI. So there are things like wrist breadth and ankle breadth. It's actually a different equation when it comes to that. I don't even know how that equation works. I know Casey Butt is kind of the last name, Butt, B-U-T-T. Mm-hmm. Casey Butt, if you go look up his website, weighttrainer.net, he actually has an equation using wrist breadth and ankle breadth that you're able to calculate different ratios of, you know, what's your genetic potential like.
And right, it's the maximum muscular potential model, I think.
Yeah, I remember I put in my measurements when I was doing this research, and it pretty much said that I was at my max muscle mass right now when I looked at that, and I was... actually hoping that it's pretty wrong, especially
I don't know about that.
Especially since I'm only 22, I think there's quite a bit of progress still left to be had.
Oh yeah.
Also, I do think I am in top tiers when it comes to genetics in that aspect. So, you know, maybe I do push some of the limits as far as genetic potential when it comes to muscle mass. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I think muscle bone ratio and wrist and ankle breadth is probably the two most accurate when you're seeing things like that, as far as like muscle potential. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as steroids, you know, we don't know the genetic potential when it comes to introducing all kinds of chemicals into your body.
Once you introduce all these outside variables, it just puts so many variables into it. It's impossible to measure because it depends on how much you're taking, what you're taking, what time you're taking it, how long you take it for, as well as your other supplementation, your nutrition, and your training. So they just think it becomes impossible to measure your muscular potential once you go down that path.
Yeah. I think some people see, you know, guys in the gym that are huge, and they're like, all right, well, is he at his limit? And this guy's obviously on steroids. And I just want to be like, well, it depends on how much more he wants to put in him and how much harder he's willing to work. Mm-hmm. You know, if you give yourself time, it's not necessarily how much steroids you're taking, how much test, how much DECA, whatever you're putting in your body. It's, you know, there are actually people that respond to steroids better than some.
Yeah.
You know, some cycles work better than other cycles in some people. Some combinations work better than other combinations when it comes to building muscle. I think there's a genetic variable in that too.
I agree. I see plenty of people that I had no idea that they were running the cycle until they told me. I was blown away because I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
And there's other people that just react so much better to it.
Yeah.
As soon as they, just a few weeks into running the cycle or whatever it is that they're taking, you can tell immediately, like, oh, this guy's just blown up out of nowhere.
Yep.
He's obviously reacting very well to it.
Yeah, there are definitely high responders and low responders when it comes to steroids.
And there's, it's that way with just training, period. There's low responders.
Yeah.
With hypertrophy and strength, whatever it is you're training for.
Yeah, and I think that ties in kind of like to the study that we were looking at that looked at arm size in response to training.
Right. They looked at the bicep measurement, I think.
Yeah, I thought those numbers that we were seeing was pretty ridiculous. But it's good that their sample size was literally 585 people. You know, they took them through an arm training cycle that actually had progressions in it over 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. And they tested different 6-rep maxes for arms, used linear periodization. They were able to see that it was just crazy differences in how much people were able to respond to training.
Right, like the worst responders had like a lost 2% of their muscle cross-sectional area.
They literally lost muscle mass.
And then the best responders had close to 60% increase in their muscle cross-sectional area.
Yeah.
And a 1-rep max increase of like 250%.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
So the possible limitations to that is, you know, they didn't control for nutrition. But even though they didn't control for nutrition, you can see that, you know, some people were able to respond really, really well. You know, they did look at cross-sectional area using MRI, so it's going to be pretty accurate. You know, maybe some of those people that lost muscle mass, you know, maybe their protein intake wasn't adequate, or maybe they weren't in a surplus, and some were. Regardless, the sample size is 585 people.
Yeah, I think that gives us enough room to, you know, say, like, okay, maybe controlling for nutrition is not that big of a deal in a sample size that large.
Yeah, it's I think fat distribution is kind of the next point. You know, if you look at, first, it's me and you. You know, I think I hold a lot of fat in my chest, my front, my lower back.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to you know, females are gonna hold it differently. You hold it differently. When you come out of a show, you hold it differently.
Right.
It was crazy. I remember when I came out of my show, literally in 2 weeks, my core was just gone. Like literally all the weight went straight to my stomach.
Yeah, I mean, you see people. I've seen people step on stage and then lose their core ab oblique definition within 3 days.
It's insane.
And
there's no way to describe that. No. My only thought is, you know, there are alpha and beta cells that manipulate adipose tissue. and where it goes or whatever. And my only thought is that those cells rearrange after such a severe caloric deficit. Yeah. And you know, that was definitely sidetracked, mainly because my mind's on prep right now. But, you know, people hold body fat in different areas. And, you know, there was a 2014 study that looked at and said that 22 to 61% of fat distribution has to do with heritability. Like, that's ridiculous.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, just shows that our genes just have such a huge effect when it comes to fat storage, fat loss. And this is all just by influencing just the energy intake, energy expenditure, and then our nutrient partitioning.
It goes back to the salivary amylase stream, really, man. Yeah. That's crazy. Fat and muscle, it's all dependent upon genes. You do with what you're given. As far as, you know, response to training, you know, we talked about arm training a little bit. You know, since 2005, people have been incorporating things like DNA testing to manipulate diet and training. And I think there's a little bit to go with that. I think it's more appropriate for training than diet, to be honest.
Right.
A study in 2008 actually, you know, ran a group of athletes. And when I say athletes, they had a minimum of 2 years in the weight room to go along with being an athlete. And they gave different protocols to different athletes. And, you know, for instance, some were given 85% of their one rep max. Some were given 70, 55, and 40% of their one rep max with different rep loads. You know, some were training for power, some were training for strength, and some were training for hypertrophy. You know, there are different ratios for building fat-free mass to fat mass put on during the process. Was crazy drastic. Some responded amazing, and some responded very poorly. And this just went to show that, you know, they had high responders and low responders mm-hmm. to different types of training.
Yep.
And a lot of people have taken that study and ran with it and be like, hey, we need to really test to see, you know, what might be optimal for someone to train. There was a study in 2016 by Jones et al. That looked at 15 gene variants that had to do with power output and endurance. They were able to put together different training groups of different gene variants of those 15 genes. And they were able to see that cycling, power training, hypertrophy training affected people differently. And that if they put groups into their prescribed or slash predicted gene adaptation to training, that the people who were in the proper group actually saw more results than the people that were just put in the group. So they did about half and half per group. So let's say someone, their gene variant shows that they respond best to hypertrophy training. Half of those people would go to hypertrophy and the other half would go somewhere else. You know, then they had strength and they had endurance. It would be split half and half, where half were advantageous for that gene and the other half was just like, oh, okay, we're just going to throw you in and see what happens. The half that actually had the gene variants for the, say, strength hypertrophy or power endurance, whatever, they were able to see better results than the people that were just thrown into a training program, which is pretty ridiculous. So there were some that saw absolutely no results on some training programs, and then there were some that were hyper responders because they were actually doing what their genetic variations said that they should be doing. Isn't that ridiculous?
It's ridiculous just how much genetic variability there is even when it comes to just training modality.
Yeah, and, you know, we can look at those numbers all day and be like, okay, well, Garrett has this gene, I have this gene, I should train this way, he should train this way. I would probably not say it like that for the most part. You know, there's a lot of adaptations that go to into muscle fiber, body composition, fat loss, fat gain. And I think that for the most part, some people do respond better to certain types of training, but it all depends on goals and what someone's trying to actually accomplish from their time in the gym. So, you know, there is benefit to, I guess, training to what your body is prone to react to. However, it's definitely not everything. You know, for instance, you know, you respond really well to strength training and you put on size well. Well, you want to put on muscle mass, so right. hypertrophy training is definitely something that you should incorporate. Mm-hmm. For me, I respond well to hypertrophy training, but in my off season, after this show that's coming up, I definitely plan on getting stronger in the weight room. Yeah. Because I have to manipulate both in order to progress.
Right, so you don't want to limit yourself based on the group that you're in. You know, just because you respond best to this one type of training, which, I mean, it's going to be hard to figure that out without some trial and error. But once you do, like, that shouldn't be the only thing that you stick to. Like, you need, just because our bodies are so adaptable in the first place, your body's going to get used to that. So you're going to have to vary your training up, no matter what it is that you respond best to. Obviously, you want that to be the bulk of what you're doing, because you respond well to it, but you need to be mixing the other things in, regardless, like you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, I think genetics has a huge impact on body composition, health, fitness, but it's not everything. You know, you can see Olympic athletes, and you know, you use Michael Phelps a lot, and you can see that, like, this guy was made to swim,
right?
You know, and he was an amazing swimmer, best Olympian of all time, and you know, he was where he was supposed to be. It depends. You know, if we were to put Michael Phelps and do something else, I don't think he could do it as optimally like he did swimming,
right?
However, when it relates to health and fitness, do what you love. I think that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always necessarily dictate how you should train, rather than, you know, what do you want to see?
Train for your goals.
Yeah.
Train for your goals, because you are limited by genetics, but also your shifts, your body has so much room to change and grow outside of that. There's so many epigenetic factors that come into play that just we should limit ourselves to what we're good at or what we respond best to.
Yeah. I think there are some things that we can take away from this. Is I think Greg Knuckles said it pretty great when he said, "Don't be a douche to people who are having a hard time gaining progress in the gym." You know, There are some people that literally look at a weight and they gain size. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't automatically assume that just because someone isn't putting on size as fast as someone, or maybe someone has 5 years of training and someone has 2 years of training, and the dude that has 2 years of training is huge. You can't just say that person that has 2 years of training doesn't know as much as the guy that's smaller and has more training in the gym. In the realm of health and fitness, especially at work or whatever, people associate you know results with knowledge, and it's not always the case.
Yeah.
So don't automatically assume that if someone's small that they don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. I work with some pretty smart people.
I've seen a lot of smart people out there that know a lot about training,
and they are not impressive when it comes to their physique.
No, because you know what, they've devoted a lot of time to learning and researching the topic, and not as much as, you know, devoting their time to actually being in the gym, which there's a happy medium you need to find there, but it would surprise you sometimes.
Yeah, you might be able to see that guy that's a little bit bigger, and you know, you can maybe think that guy is more applicable when it comes to real world application to strength training. You know, if someone's a scientist and, you know, also practices application of the science, I think that's awesome. However, you know, don't shy off the skinny guys, man. Like Garrett, just because he's small, you know, don't make.
Yeah, sure.
Just because Garrett's small, don't think that he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Just because Joel's weak, doesn't mean he didn't know what he's talking about either.
Yeah,
so,
that's a good point.
At the end of the day, if you're that worried about genetics, sorry, pick your parents better.
Oh, yeah. If you could do one thing better to get results, pick your parents, or man, maybe get on a good cycle.
Yeah,
man. I got nothing left for genetics. that's all I got for him when it comes to genetics.
Yeah.
I know it's been a while since we recorded. We do get busy, and what makes it kind of tough is we have conflicting schedules.
Mm-hmm. Joe works a lot. And
I work late, too, and Garrett does not work late. And when I get home, he's ready to go to bed.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that I'm on prep kind of makes things a little bit worse. Makes me not want to record, mm-hmm. for the most part. It makes me want to just lay on that futon and not move.
I got a lot of studying going on. I'm studying for GRE and whatnot. So once that gets out of the way, and once Joel gets his prep competition out of the way in less than a month, we'll be a little bit more on time with our podcast.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe we'll be shooting them out a little bit quicker. We'll have a podcast on contest prep and how prep is going for me right now. I'm telling you guys, it's really starting to weigh on me. It wasn't bad about a week ago, but I'm definitely starting to get prep-mind and things like that.
We'll save that for the next one.
Okay.
You can whine and complain in the next one.
Okay, I'll whine next time. I got nothing else for them. This is your host, Joel Cummins.
And Garrett Augsburger. Thank you guys for listening and tuning in. We really appreciate it and all the feedback we've been getting. Again, just if you have any comments or requests for future episodes, shoot them to us. Text if you know us. DM us over Instagram. Follow us on there, Fightline Fitness Official. I got nothing else.
Okay. All right. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thank you.
But I just wanna flatline. I just wanna flatline. Maybe this is all my fault. But I just wanna flatline. I just wanna flatline. Maybe we going too far.